This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You have reached the edge of the world, and boy, is this ever something today. You're going to hear, get set, fasten your seatbelts. Linda Moulton Howe is back from Turkey, back from Göbekli Tepe, back from deep and extraordinary explorations, and she has got a story to tell. An incredible interview with Dr. Robert Schock, the great geologist who initially was the first person to discover the actual age of the Sphinx, who was with her at Göbekli Tepe. I cannot say enough about it. And if you're a subscriber to Dreamland, do not miss the conversation that we have after as we explore some of the incredible mysteries that are brought up during this program. And then toward the end of that conversation, there is a discussion of the mysterious Voynich manuscript. Look it up, V-O-Y-N-I-C-H manuscript, and a discovery that Linda has made about its connection to some of the ruins in Turkey that is simply astonishing. And now, without further ado, here she is from Albuquerque and places much farther away in space and time, Linda Moulton Howe.
Thanks, Whitley. Well, I'll tell you, those first 2 weeks of June of 2012 were one of the most extraordinary days in my entire life as I and a group traveled from Istanbul going southeastward toward Göbekli Tepe, that is 12,000 years old by carbon dating. And as the sun rose on Wednesday, June 13th, I was standing on the Göbekli Tepe hilltop in southern Turkey, not far from the Syrian northern border. Carbon dated to 12,000 years ago, Göbekli is older than Egypt, Sumeria, classical Greeks, and Stonehenge. Ramps have been built to walk around the archaeological excavations of mysterious 16 to 19 foot tall, elegantly carved limestone pillars placed carefully in circular patterns. There are at least 30 acres of these pillar circles 1,000 feet above the valley floor. Each pillar weighs 7 to 10 tons. Many are sculpted with odd, even unrecognizable animals, insects, and humanoid figures. A few unfinished pillars have been found that are 23 to 30 feet long, much larger than any of the finished standing pillars found so far. There is evidence that the pillars were roofed and that the central pair of tallest pillars may have supported a roof. The floors are made of burnt lime known as terrazzo. On June 13th at sunrise, I faced the sun and then turned 180 degrees to face the opposite point in the west. Below me was a large pillar, anciently cemented to a rectangular base that looks like an altar. On that altar pillar is a long-bodied animal that does not quite match any known earth animal today. With the sun shining on my back, feeling that warmth, that pillar animal was facing me on an east-west axis. Then to my right was another large pillar, also mounted on a rectangular base. That second altar pillar also faces the sun on an east-west axis, and it has two long arms stretching down along the broad sides of the pillar around another animal, maybe a fox, that has a shorter body and shorter tail. The arms end in fingers that clasp the pillar. Below the hands is a band of symbols that to date have not been translated. And along the base of that rectangular altar are five strange bird-like creatures that are not identified either. I was there with Boston University geologist Robert M. Schock, Ph.D., his wife Katie and their Turkish tour team of Gregory Poplowski and Jack Jakubowski from Poland and their Turkish guide, Swat. They led our group of about 40 Americans from Istanbul through many other ancient Greek, Roman, and Byzantine archaeological sites as we traveled southeastward to Göbekli during those first 2 weeks of June. Göbekli Tepe in Turkish means a pot-belly hill. First studied in a 1964 survey by Istanbul University and University of Chicago scientists. And they concluded the hill could not be entirely natural. But it was not until 1994 that German archaeologist Klaus Schmidt, Ph.D., began excavating layer by layer, carefully dating and studying the surrounding soils as he dug. To his surprise, Dr. Schmidt did not find evidence of cooking hearths, no houses, no trash pits, and no clay fertility figurines. He found some stone hammers and blades, but no specific tools that could explain how the extraordinary three-dimensional sculptures were made. Eventually, Dr. Schmidt called Göbekli Tepe a 12,000-year-old cathedral on a hill without knowing who made it or why. Since 1994, only 5% of the limestone pillar circles have been uncovered. According to ground-penetrating radar, there might be at least 250 more standing pillars formed in at least 18 more circles still buried under an additional 22-some acres of deep soil. All of this built 12,000 years ago and then carefully reburied 1,000 years later. Smithsonian Magazine reporter Andrew Curry visited Göbekli Tepe and wrote, quote, "What was so important to these early people that they gathered to build and bury these stone rings? The gulf that separates us from Göbekli Tepe's builders is almost unimaginable. Indeed, though I stood among the looming megaliths eager to take in their meaning, they didn't speak to me. They were utterly foreign, placed there by people who saw the world in a way I will never comprehend," close quote. Just how certain are the scientists who have studied the Göbekli Tepe site about its age and reburial 1,000 years after the pillars were so carefully placed in circles over the 30-acre hilltop? Well, here now is my discussion about that question with Professor Robert Schock, Ph.D. geologist from Boston University.
Professor Dr. Klaus Schmidt of the German Archaeological Institute, he's been doing absolutely meticulous studies. He's been excavating layer by layer, very carefully, very precisely, which is one reason it's been taking him so long, years and years, just to uncover the area he's uncovered so far. Something he's doing is literally peeling back the layers. And this is important from my point of view as a geologist and stratigrapher, because how a site is covered over, how the dirt is stratified, how the dirt is layered, how it's jumbled versus layered is very, very important for figuring out the history of that site. So I was very convinced that his scenario of it being purposefully covered over is absolutely the case. And as he's peeling away these layers, he's been sampling. So he samples the different layers. He samples different material in the different layers. You can sample material that the layers are composed of. So you find bits of charcoal and bone and other types of material that has carbon in it. So this is useful for carbon dating, radiometric dating, radiocarbon dating. So if you find a piece of bone, for instance, or a piece of charcoal in the material that was used to fill in the site, you can date that. That essentially dates the material that was used to fill it in. The second major point is that once it is covered over with the material, you start to form soil. You start to have natural processes taking place that, for instance, will dissolve out some of the calcite. There's a lot of limestone in this area. A lot of the debris and rubble is limestone or has calcite in it. The major pillars are made out of calcite. Calcite dissolves with rainwater. It dissolves slowly but quite perceptibly. If anyone's looked at, for instance, a very old cathedral, they may see how it looks like the limestone looks like it's melting. So it actually dissolves, and then it reprecipitates out. You see this in caves all the time with the formation of stalactites and stalagmites. That's calcite that's dissolving from the rock and reprecipitating out. Now, this happens in the case of Göbekli Tepe in the soils that form in the layer of rubble, the layer of overburden that was used to cover it over. So this starts forming after it's covered over, as it forms soil, as it's rained on, and the calcite itself can be carbon dated. And by carbon dating that, we can get a fix on when it was completely covered over, because this will start forming after it's completely covered over, and it takes some time also. It takes at least a couple of centuries and continues to form.
I understand that Dr. Klaus Schmidt says that the refill happened approximately 8,800 BC, about 1,000 years after the pillars were first erected?
Yes, that sounds correct. Because what you do is you estimate that based on this calcite reprecipitating, these minerals forming, and they will form at a certain time, but it takes time for them to form, so the date you get on those minerals is actually later than when it was initially refilled.
Mm-hmm.
So we can be very confident, I believe, looking at all the data, having discussed it with him on site, that it was covered over in the 9th millennium BC, as you just said, which is an incredible amount of time from the present. We're talking 10,000 plus years ago, and we know that it was completely covered over, and then we know that it was used for 1,000 or more years before that. So this is really pushing the date of Göbekli Tepe way back geologically to the end of the last ice age, pushing it back to 12,000 years. And this is just what's exposed. This is just what's been uncovered. I actually wonder, and I'm speculating here, that as more of the site is uncovered, could some of the stone circles be even older? Could they go back even further than 12,000 years ago?
And that is at least 7,000 years older than the academically acceptable 5,000 years ago Sumerian Mesopotamian alleged beginning of civilization.
Yes, exactly. And I like the way you said it, because it's 7,000 years older than the accepted 5,000 years ago. So that's more than double. Put it this way, when the Sumerians and the early dynastic Egyptians were first doing their thing, Göbekli Tepe was already older to them than they are to us.
That's right. And is it fair to say that no one knows of any human culture 12,000 years ago that would have had the sophistication and the ability to create the 30 acres of tall, standing, elegantly proportioned and carved pillars?
The way you said it, I think that's a fair statement, because they exist. Those pillars are there, those enclosures are there, but we don't have any independent evidence of this culture or this civilization elsewhere.
And that goes to the question of what was the purpose of Göbekli Tepe and all of the pillars in the first place. Some people have been suggesting that stone circles on the planet may have played in some kind of frequency, resonance, sound, like machines all over the planet, including Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
If there was some kind of frequency or resonance role for all of these standing pillars in circles over the 30 acres of the original standing pillars at Göbekli Tepe, and then 1,000 years later, it all gets covered up. Was the machine then stopped? And as the excavation goes forward to 2012 and beyond, could it be that Göbekli Tepe and all of those pillars are coming back into perhaps some kind of function?
I don't know. I mean, certainly if we think of it that way, those pillars are set up in a way that really boggles the imagination. They're very tall, they're very flat, they're very thin. They are set into the stone floor in such a way that, in my assessment, they're not so much set to just be stable and chunky and sort of stout. They're long, thin, they're rising up from the surface. They actually strike me as sort of like tuning forks, that they would vibrate. And it has been suggested by other researchers, too, that they may have actually been intended, among other things, to vibrate or to hum. So this is incredibly sophisticated. And I could imagine that these circles humming or vibrating when they were at their peak, when they were first made. So So that may have affected consciousness levels, but I think the point is well taken that in some ways you could see it as a machine. You could see these stone enclosures as machines. And that doesn't preclude, in my opinion, other functions for them simultaneously. Once you cover them over, that would stop it. But when you uncover them, as you suggest, could they start up again?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's mystery upon mystery.
It's a mystery upon mystery, yes.
Well, Free Dreamland listeners, we'll be back in just a moment. I'm not going to run any commercials today because I think it's very obvious. A lot of you realize what you're listening to here. That is to say that the truth about the human past is finally becoming irrefutable. And you're listening to it here. This is where you're finding this out. So you got to support this. It doesn't have any other way. You got to do it. Come on in, become a subscriber, get all the benefits, and they are quite considerable. It's a perfectly beautiful subscriber section. And it's becoming more important every day that passes. As we look back into our own past, as we look out into this extraordinary universe around us, it's going to take really open minds. And you know where they are? They're right here. This is where they are. This is where you're going to hear it first. You have a right to think about this world as it really is. A basic, basic right. It starts here. At Unknown Country, at earthfiles.com, at williamhenry.net, at all of the other wonderful sites that are making this effort to open the mind. So subscribe today. Unknowncountry.com needs you. And I think I'm right when I say so often, you need us. Go to the homepage, click on the subscriber tab, and get started. It's real simple. You can even subscribe by mail if you prefer. There's a form right there that you can fill out and mail in with a check. It's easy. Now let's get back to this incredible show.
Shockingly, in June 2012, before our tour group arrived, one of the excavated Göbekli sculptures was stolen, and an investigation is underway with Klaus Schmidt's cooperation. In fact, he had to be in Ankara because of the Göbekli theft, so we never got to meet Dr. Schmidt. But the theft has provoked even more security at the Hill excavation, and the transfer of valuable 12,000-year-old stone artifacts to the local Urfa Museum in San Lurfa. When we visited on June 13, 2012, after the sunrise morning at Göbekli Tepe, I was disturbed by the eerie, haunting, puzzling Göbekli sculptures, especially a totem about 6 feet tall to the left of a short, alien-looking being. Adding to the Göbekli pillar's strangeness, the June 2012 issue of Turkey's Actual Archaeology reports about the Göbekli Tepe limestone pillar that has long arms, the mysterious belt of untranslated symbols, and an animal skin hanging from the belt, quote, "A loincloth, perhaps a fox pelt, is depicted in relief cut out of the stone hanging down, covering the genital region. Due to the existence not only of arms and human hands, belt, and loincloths, it can be clearly stated that the T-shaped pillars have an anthropomorphic identity, but who are they? As their faces are never depicted, they seem very likely to be related to supernatural beings, beings gathered at Göbekli Tepe for certain, but so far unknown purposes," close quote. Dr. Schock led us to the Urfa Museum in nearby San Lurfa, Turkey, where today are displayed some of the most valuable Göbekli Tepe carved stone animals, bizarre stone totem, and an extraordinary stone statue that does have a face. It is a detailed humanoid, apparently holding its erect phallus in both hands, but it has no mouth. It was sculpted without a mouth. Here now is my discussion about these 12,000-year-old stone artifacts with Dr. Robert Schock. One of the biggest surprises for me on this trip was to learn that one of the pieces of stone sculpture at Göbekli Tepe has been stolen.
Yes, it's horrible.
Do we have any idea which one?
I don't know any details on that. I understood that's one of the fairly small ones. When we were looking at the Urfa Museum, remember there were various sculptures on display, all of which are solid stone, all of which would be very heavy, but some of them you can imagine that a strong person could pick it up and carry it off.
Could you explain why the Urfa Museum has become a place where some of the most valuable archaeological pillars and totems and so forth have been moved?
Well, two things. One, Göbekli Tepe is not very far from Urfa, and I have spoken on a previous trip to the director of the Urfa Museum. As I understand, Göbekli Tepe as a site falls within the domain of Urfa Museum as a repository for movable artifacts that are excavated at Göbekli Tepe. So all of this is ultimately government property. When I was there last time before this trip that you and I just came back from, some of those artifacts, some of those sculptures I was told were there because they had been excavated as of the last time I was there, but I was told that they were in storage, they were being conserved, they were being cataloged, and they were off limits for anyone to see. So I was very pleased to see them on display on this trip.
And I was very curious what your own personal reaction was to what seemed to me the most bizarre menagerie of creatures and the totem that are not really recognizable in terms of current Earth life, and left me with a haunting feeling, especially the totem that seems to be something like a very large, grotesque something, not human, with its face obliterated, but it comes down in what appears to be a scene of these arms holding two or three versions of what ends up looking like the birth of some sort of a human-like creature. And when you look at that totem from the top to that birth, it appears to be an evolution from something that is huge and not recognizable down to the birth.
Yes, it's very strange. You described it well just now. It's like a small totem pole carved out of stone, and it's inexplicable at this point, I believe. It does look like at the very bottom there's a human being born from it. But other parts of it, as you said, are inexplicable. They don't look real human. They look, I hate to say monstrous, but they're very strange. And looking at all of those sculptures that we see in the Urfa Museum, as well as the ones on the pillars, some of them look more naturalistic. Some of them are more recognizable as actual animals, but other ones you really scratch your head and you say, exactly what animal is this or what is this?
Right.
The feline type sculptures, what are they exactly? They don't look like any particular animal. They're not exactly lions. Just don't know. They're very strange and they're haunting to me. As you know, they are on very high security because a sculpture was stolen. And that's one reason they take the small sculptures back to the museum rather than leave them on site.
Well, one of the characters there that is both haunting and baffling is what is called Urfa Man. And I am so glad that it was there behind glass and that we could photograph it clearly. And I am curious what you think about the faceted crystal, deep black eyes, and the nose has been broken off. But it's very clear there never was a mouth. It is simply a sunken, sculpted area. What do you think that means in the context that the Urfa man is holding with the hands around the phallus with this strange, mouthless head?
Yeah, strange, mouthless head, the position of the arms down to the
phallic area.
Phallic area. No legs, it's just a peg as if to set it up somewhere, but it seems clear to me it never had legs originally. It's a very haunting sculpture. To me, it has a personality, but it's sort of a
alien
personality. It's like every man and no man, every person and no person. It's not trying to be, in my opinion, an individual, but it's almost like a consciousness.
Right.
And then it's got this, we'll call it a necklace or something around.
The V-neck.
Yeah, the V-neck, which is really strange because otherwise it seems like it's naked. There's no indication of hair on it, no mouth. It's very, very strange.
The double V-neck would suggest that it was an illustration of a leotard-like garment.
Yes, exactly. If you interpret it as wearing clothing, it's wearing some kind of very tight-fitting leotard-type clothing, something that fits to the body. And also, I want to mention that Urfa Man, which I am blown away by Urfa Man. It's an incredible sculpture. If this were a sculpture today in the modern age, it would be considered a masterpiece, in my opinion. There's nothing primitive about it. I think they knew exactly what they wanted to do. They were very precise about doing it. I think they got just the right feel, just the right message that they're sending with it. So I think all of that was very intentional.
But what is the message of no mouth deliberately sculpted as just plain skin across the chin?
Yeah, but I think it has something to do with universal consciousness, higher consciousness, not stressing the individual. To me, it's more a universal symbol of something
that doesn't need words but is using its mind.
More transcendent. Also, I wanted to point out that of all the things that it reminds me of the moai, the torsos and the heads with this similar positioned arms and hands that you have on Easter Island. But Easter Island is half a world away. So I see other connections there, but they're strange connections from a conventional point of view to try to connect the themes you have at Göbekli Tepe in Turkey to the themes you have on Easter Island, little speck of rock in the remote Pacific. Yet, to me, they're very similar in style and characteristics and the message they're sending.
But beyond no mouth isolation and perhaps telepathic consciousness, why was Göbekli Tepe constructed in the first place so long ago? And why was it so completely and carefully covered up? I interviewed geologist Robert M. Schock inside the Göbekli Tepe excavation on June 13th. I asked him if Göbekli Tepe's creation and purpose is perhaps the greatest archaeological and historical mystery on the planet today. What does Dr. Schock speculate happened 1,000 years after the pillars and sculptures were erected in circles over 30 acres? What provoked someone to cover the whole site back over with dirt? Here now, my interview continues with geologist Robert M. Schock from Boston University.
Before we continue on, help us continue on. Subscribe. That's all I have to say. Now let's continue listening to Dr. Schock.
I believe is a question that ties in with the end of the last ice age, and I believe as a geologist that there were catastrophic things happening on Earth at the end of the last ice age. I believe that the dramatic warming and the glaciers melting tied in with major rains, major floods. I believe there was earthquake and volcanic activity that would have been set off at least in part by the release of pressure from glaciers melting at higher latitudes. But I think this all ties back ultimately to solar outbursts, that the sun at that time underwent a series of major solar outbursts, unlike anything we have seen in historic times. We have petroglyphs, which I believe that humans were recording major solar outbursts, and plasma, that is electrically charged particles, hitting the atmosphere, seen in the skies, we can now reconstruct in the lab, but have not seen in historical times. In fact, I think that on Easter Island, we have some very good records of this. The Rongo Rongo script, I believe, is a copy of a record of a major solar outburst. I would also point out that there's been a lot of talk of comets at the end of the last ice age.
Mm-hmm.
These are not incompatible. What we have at the end of the last ice age is a relatively slow and gradual warming. Then we have a cold snap.
Called the Younger Dryas.
The Younger Dryas. The cold snap starts about 10,900 BC, about 12,900 years ago, and it gets very cold. Then 1,000-plus years later, you have a dramatic warming spell, which occurs over a very short period of time, maybe 3 years, maybe literally overnight. And my working hypothesis as a geologist and looking at all the data is that there's lots of evidence for a comet hitting Earth or exploding in the upper atmosphere at the beginning of the Younger Dryas and causing that cold spell, and then the cold spell ending at the very end of the last ice age with a major solar outburst.
That would have included all kinds of flooding.
All kinds of flooding, and the flooding is important and would tie right in with a major solar outburst because what you would have is dramatic warming of the climate. I believe it was such a major solar outburst that you literally had what we would view as sort of huge lightning strikes, plasma striking the Earth, causing glaciers to melt very rapidly, causing water to evaporate. Once you put a lot of water into the atmosphere, it can't stay there forever. The atmosphere can only hold so much water before it precipitates out again, so you'd have horrendous rains, and that would cause flooding, a literal cataclysm on many levels. Releasing all that pressure from glaciers at high latitudes would have cascading ramifications, I believe, around the globe of earthquake activity, volcanic activity.
And what is so baffling is what intelligence working in terraforming on the Earth would have been able to even anticipate or know what was coming in order to rebury 30 acres of the Göbekli Tepe site.
Yes, and what is becoming apparent based on the data is that the sun undergoes even longer cycles on the order of thousands of years, and one of those cycles, I believe, is about 10 to 12,000 year cycle of relative instability when the sun does undergo these major solar outbursts. And we know that this happened now based on data of solar activity as recorded in various isotopes at the end of the last ice age. Perhaps they had that knowledge that something was coming. Maybe they had an inkling that when they start seeing certain activity, well, they better prepare for it.
Have you and Dr. Schmidt estimated what the volume in cubic tons that would have been necessary to recover 30 acres of the standing pillars?
I think he's tried to make some estimates. We're talking thousands of cubic meters. Incredible amount, because you essentially have an artificial mountain over what is Göbekli Tepe as we know it. But remember, the site is huge, as you mentioned. All the work they put into carving those pillars, erecting them, erecting walls between them at a later stage, all the work and time and energy they put into it is in many ways dwarfed by the amount of time and work and energy they put into covering them over again.
Right. And that goes to the question of what was the purpose of Göbekli Tepe and all of the pillars in the first place. Some people have been suggesting that stone circles on the planet may have played in some kind of frequency, resonance, sound, like machines all over the planet, including Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
If there was some kind of frequency or resonance role for all of these standing pillars in circles over the 30 acres, could it be that Göbekli Tepe and all of those pillars are coming back into perhaps some kind of function?
I don't know.
Also, not too far away, another example of the top of a mountain being completely artificial, that's Mount Nemrut that we visited.
Exactly. In fact, I'm very glad we saw both of those on the same trip, because Mount Nemrut is very clear to me as a geologist. That is an artificial peak on top of the mountain. It's piled up with gravel purposefully. They pick the gravel of a certain size, of a certain shape, so that it would have, from a geological perspective, a high angle of repose. That means it wouldn't roll down easily like a bunch of marbles. It's actually a very sophisticated pile of gravel. So here we have, I believe, the same type of tradition and spending an incredible amount of time and energy to do that. I also wonder what is under that pile of gravel at Mount Nemrut. No one knows for certain.
Yes, and it has the feeling that there might be something hugely remarkable in there. That means that somebody had the ability to put artificial stones on top to create Mount Nemrut. Were these incredible sculptures and structures around this huge artificial mountain top put there to guard, to warn, to do what?
I think probably both, to guard, to warn, and possibly to attract attention to it at the right time, at the right place, maybe at this time. Mount Nemrut apparently disappeared from history for almost 2,000 years until it was, quote, rediscovered, unquote, in the late 19th century. So it was there. They were sentinels guarding the mountain, and now we know about it again. It's been rediscovered. And I would very much love to know what's under that pile of rubble in the mountain there.
Have you talked with Klaus Schmidt about whether or not deep penetrating radar could be applied on Mount Nemrut as it has been at Göbekli Tepe?
No, I haven't spoken with him about that, but I would love to see something like that done. And actually to get deeper, maybe not ground penetrating radar, but even using some type of seismic work as I've done around the Sphinx in the past. And we found a chamber under the paw, we found tunnels, that type of thing. And I think the same type of techniques, the same type of methodology would work very well at Mount Nemrut to try to find what's under there, because it could be quite deep.
In terms of the work that you have done on the Sphinx, you now think that it goes back perhaps 12,000 to 14,000 years ago, almost contemporaneous with the creation of Göbekli Tepe?
Yeah, actually, I have at this point been speculating that the core body of the Sphinx, the oldest portions of the Sphinx, could be contemporaneous with Göbekli Tepe. And it's falling into place now that the core body of the Sphinx, and let me be clear, the head is recarved. It is not the original head. That, in my opinion, is a dynastic head on the Sphinx, the recarving.
And this is what we call the female cat head, but you think that before then it was what?
I believe it was a male lion. The current Sphinx originally had the head of a male lion, and it might represent the constellation Leo in the sky. And the Sphinx does, in the age of Leo, look out to its own image, if you accept it as having been a lion. And that would push it back to Göbekli Tepe times. The age of Leo would be contemporaneous with Göbekli Tepe. The end of the last ice age and the torrential downpours that would have occurred then, could that be the water that caused the rain erosion on the body of the Sphinx and in the Sphinx enclosure? I feel like all of this is starting to fall into place, that the Sphinx does go back to that very early period. And I'm so excited about Göbekli Tepe, and that we have here a clear confirmation of advanced civilization, as I've been talking about for 20 years. So I am definitely thinking in terms that the oldest portions of the Sphinx go back to Göbekli Tepe times, back to the very end of the last ice age, some 12,000 years ago.
And Mount Nemrut, there are lions in some of those sculptures that are reminiscent in my mind to Egypt.
Oh, I agree. There's sculptures reminiscent of Egypt. Also, some of the birds, the eagle types,
right,
are very reminiscent, in my opinion, of Egypt. But they also combine, as you mentioned, Mesopotamian elements, Persian. It's a real
baffling
combination.
And not only is Göbekli Tepe and Mount Nemrut artificially covered over, and now Göbekli is in the process of being excavated and revealed, Mount Nemrut rises to this strange artificial top with all of these, almost like a slideshow of a timeline of history of all these various heads of different types from Egypt to Assyria and Persia and so forth. But there is yet another area that suggests to Dr. Schock and to others that something of perhaps a cataclysmic nature happened going back again to the end of the Ice Age in a region of Turkey known as Cappadocia. That is the way it's pronounced in Turkey. It is northwest of Göbekli Tepe, quite a few miles, and we went there and rose in a hot air balloon at sunrise over literally the most bizarre and yet beautiful landscape I have ever seen on this planet. It is volcanic rock that people long ago chiseled and dug into some 2,000 years ago to escape Roman tax collectors. But archaeologists, including Dr. Schock, think the Cappadocia region of Turkey, with all of its underground structures, goes back at least 9,000 years, maybe older. And we went down, straight down, into room after room, tunnel after tunnel, no wider than our hips, getting down low below the surface, and yet the air was as fresh as it was outside because of very sophisticated air ducts that some estimate as many as 25,000 people and animals went underground into the Cappadocia cities. If so, what made all of these humans work so hard to live underground for centuries? Was it a cataclysm from outer space? Was it the same cataclysm that caused Göbekli Tepe to be covered and the top of Mount Nemrut to become artificial?
Incredibly provocative and as yet unanswered questions. But Linda has a lot of ideas about what might have happened, and so do I. And stay with us if you're an unknowncountry.com subscriber. Come with us into the subscriber area. We're going to get more deeply into this, and your comments are very welcome in the subscriber area, of course. If you want to make comments about this on the show, go right ahead. If you have questions, you can always ask us in the comment section. We can certainly answer. Linda, it has been an extraordinary presentation. I'm glad that you're back, and I think this is probably perhaps the most extraordinary and interesting Dreamland I've ever had. Huge, incredible implications. Wow. Thank you so much for being with us.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and our family of subscribers. Our news editor is Ann Streber. Our science reporter is Linda Bolton Howe. Our webmaster is Daniel Stiegel. And I'm your Dreamland announcer, Brian Arnold. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.